Welcome back to the Connect Dots Bitch podcast. I am your host, Amy Fiedler, certified trauma support specialist, certified holistic life coach. And today I'm going to talk to you about the three top ways we're taught and shown not to have boundaries. You know, I like to look at the holiday season as boundary season because a lot of us are going to be around a lot more people than we are, you know, throughout the rest of the year. We might be gathering with family that we don't connect with for periods of time. We might be in close quarters with people that make us uncomfortable, or even being introduced and meeting new people. Let's say if you are spending a holiday with a friend's family or a new partner's family. And boundaries become essential, not just for ourselves, right? To support and protect and preserve our own mental and emotional well-being, but they're essential within our relationships of all kinds. So I want to bring some awareness to your life and your relationships today by offering you more insight into these top three ways that might have been the catalyst for your behavior patterns or your current struggles right now. Now, y'all know I talk a lot about boundaries. I mean, if you have been listening to this podcast for countless seasons at this point, a couple years, if you've been following me on social media, I've been talking about boundaries endlessly for a long time. Now that I'm pregnant, mind you, we're 8 months pregnant at this point, so we're in the home stretch. But throughout this pregnancy, as somebody who obviously is really tuned into her own boundaries and teaches it and talks about it endlessly, I have learned so much more about myself being pregnant. And what the takeaway here is, and I'll pull it out of that context of pregnancy for you. The takeaway is every time you have a new experience in life, right? You enter a new chapter, you meet new people, you're exposed to something new, whether it's a job, a place you've traveled to, a new relationship of some kind. Your boundaries have to be reviewed. That's how we'll look at it. You have to kind of reassess them and check in with yourself because you're constantly growing and evolving, and they are too. They stay with you for a lifetime. So the boundaries you set at the age of, let's say, 30 may not be boundaries that you are going to want to keep exactly as they are at the age of 40. You might need to make some adjustments. Probably what will occur is you'll get more clear, more specific about your own limitations. So that's what's been going on with me for the last 8 months. A reassessment, a review period, you know, revisiting boundaries that were pretty solid, honestly, in certain relationships prior to being pregnant. And the takeaway here is that I didn't get it wrong before, you know? Like, you can't look at it in such an extreme fashion, like, oh, you got it wrong and pregnancy taught you a lesson. That's so harsh. The truth is that my boundaries pre-pregnancy in certain relationships, they worked for where I was at. And then some things changed and I had to evolve with them. Right? My needs changed, my wants changed, my limits changed. And that's going to happen to you too in any new experience that you encounter. It happened to me when Phil and I first got together, not just within our relationship, which was brand new at that time, but within my other relationships, friendships, family relationships. Because there was someone new in my life, I didn't eliminate people at all, but I had to reassess how I was interacting with people. So it's a topic that stays with us, right? It's a skill that I always call foundational because you're going to need it for the rest of your life. And that goes the same with self-trust. If you don't have that self-trust component, then setting boundaries is rather difficult. You might learn the skills to communicate and set them, but you're going to have a very difficult time if you're challenged or you're triggered, because if you don't trust yourself, if you don't have that other foundational skill of self-trust, you're going to waver. You're going to self-abandon. You're going to be wishy-washy. You're going to be talked out of that boundary being implemented and upheld. So let's start with always, what is step one, with some awareness and identification of where maybe your struggles, maybe your weak points of boundary setting began. And again, I'm going to give you the top three ways in which you were probably shown or taught to not have boundaries. So our first way in which we are taught to not have boundaries is through obedience. Now, maybe you grew up similar to myself in an environment where the definition of obedience was confused with the definition of respect. And so they didn't really have the correct definition or understanding or behavioral communication examples of respect. They had obedience, and that came from their upbringing back when they were kids. So obedience was what was enforced in the house, and it sounded like you do what we tell you to do. You speak when you're spoken to. When I say jump, you say how high. Those are a little more rigid forms of obedience. Then there's other ways in which obedience can be encouraged or taught to you, and that's where you are not given any space to have your own emotions due to a conflict arising, or there was no safe space for you to emote differently than the parents or the caregivers. As in, if they told you to get over it, you had to at least behave as if you were over it. So it taught you to self-abandon. It taught you to self-neglect. It taught you to not be attuned to those emotions and those body-based sensations that you were feeling. And it probably instilled fears of punishment, backlash, rejection, abandonment, the silent treatment, if you stepped out of line, right? So if you talked back, I don't know how many of you, but that was a big thing when I was a kid. You don't talk back to the adults or the parents or the caregivers or whomever is caring for you or raising you. Anyone who's older than you, you don't talk back to. What did that actually mean? It meant they weren't going to give you a space to be heard or express yourself. They spoke and that was it. There was only space for them to speak or them to comment or them to yell or them to emote and not you. And if you stepped out of line, right, if you didn't follow the rules that they were teaching you and conditioning you to follow, then you were a disobedient child. Now, obviously, we know firsthand what that does to an adult child. If you weren't given a space, if you were encouraged to abandon your feelings, your wants, your needs, your thoughts, right, your values in a situation, because the way we learn to self-advocate, the way we learn to respect ourselves is through that childhood conditioning. So if over and over and over again, that space was not given to you, you were cut off, what do you think you're going to do as an adult? You're going to cut yourself off. You're going to feel like you're not allowed to speak up. You're going to feel like they're going to punish me And that punishment is going to be based off of your childhood conditioning. So if you were given the silent treatment, you for damn sure as an adult are going to fear that coming at you. And it's going to be such a fear, you're going to adapt your behavior in a way that you did as a child to prevent that from occurring. And now, rinse and repeat that for any other fear that might come up for you. Fear of backlash, right? Fear of conflict, fear of rejection, fear of punishment. Number two on the list is people pleasing. Now, people pleasing is a popular topic. You hear a lot of people talk about it, and a lot of us do it. A lot of us have been shown to do it, taught to do it, conditioned into doing it. So let me tackle a few different ways in which this could have been shown or taught to you. The first way is that your parents, guardians, or caregivers were people pleasers themselves. And so, again, keep in mind, the way we learn how to be in a relationship, the way we learn how to communicate, how to connect, how to respect people, is from that childhood conditioning. If you're adults, that's how I'm going to put it. It's easier than listing off all of the different options here. If your adults were fawning over people in their life, whether that was their spouse, their partner, their parents, strangers. I can speak on this, you know, watching the adults in your life feel obligated to always say yes when asked or, you know, invited somewhere. They felt obligated, like they had to, or else there might have been backlash, punishment, or someone might have thought they were mean or disrespectful, right? And so this can kind of intertwine with that whole obedience teaching in your upbringing as well. Like, I'm obligated to say yes if they ask me, right? But that can stem into people pleasing. So I feel like I have to say yes because you want me to say yes. this is gonna intertwine into the third one as well in a second. So that might have been what you witnessed and what was modeled to you in your upbringing, that the parent, guardian, caregiver was fawning over people, was pleasing, appeasing, acquiescing. Maybe the environment you grew up in, the two adults that were there, maybe one adult always acquiesce to the other's mood because they were scared of their reaction. Maybe the other parent or caregiver had a heightened reaction, and so they self-abandoned to keep the peace, right? Or they wanted to set a good example for the kids. Now, perhaps you weren't just shown and modeled that. Maybe that was encouraged of you as well, right? And again, that's where it can kind of connect back to the obedience factor, where it was encouraged of you to say yes when somebody asked you, or else there was punishment, or else there was backlash. You get the picture here. So it created this behavior pattern in you where you had to please and appease the person, the adult, right? And listen to them and obey them in order to prevent something from occurring, right? And then the other angle of this is that you adapted to this behavior based off of the behaviors that were being exhibited to you. So maybe in a very innocent way, mom and dad were mom and mom, dad and dad, you get the picture here, whatever your dynamic was, grandma, grandpa, whatever. Maybe they were full-time working individuals. And so they weren't always home and they weren't always present or able to be present. Maybe they had a high stress position. Maybe one of them was an alcoholic. Maybe they had to care for a sick or disabled sibling or parent or something like that, right? So there was an adverse experience happening in your upbringing and you felt neglected. So if you experienced some form of physical or emotional neglect, maybe it was a single parent household. And so if you were the older child or an older child at that point in time, maybe you were asked to take on responsibilities that physically were beyond what you were equipped to do or emotionally developed and ready to do. Maybe that was caring for a younger sibling. Maybe that was doing the cooking or the cleaning when you were at a very young age. So you thought, I'll just be the good child. I'll be a good girl. I'll be a good boy. I'll be obedient. I'll be helpful. I'll be kind, whatever, to keep the peace or take a necessary load or stress off of my parent or caregiver's plate, even when it really wasn't your responsibility to, right? So you might have felt neglected even emotionally, like you weren't getting undivided time and attention, or your emotional needs weren't met because maybe your caregiver didn't have the bandwidth after whatever circumstances they were involved in, and they came home, they didn't have the bandwidth to sit with you and read with you or listen to you or comfort you. Maybe they were reactive to you. And so you felt emotionally abandoned or physically neglected. And so you learned to get certain needs met, you reverted to people pleasing. What that people pleasing did was it taught you to self-abandon. It taught you to perhaps fear abandonment. It encouraged pedestaling people, prioritizing somebody else's needs, wants, values, feelings above your own. Yours didn't matter, right? So let's take it on a very basic level. You're invited somewhere and you don't want to go, but because you were encouraged to please and appease people, you felt like you had to say yes when it was a real no for you. So you were encouraged to neglect those body-based sensations again, neglect your own emotional state, neglect how you were actually feeling and what you were wanting in that moment for the sake of somebody else. Unresolved trauma from childhood in your adult caregiver not only can impact whether they're people-pleasing and modeling that behavior to you, or you know, as I said in number one, encouraging obedience. But it also can lead us into number three, which is if you were exposed to or raised by an emotionally immature parent or caregiver, we'll just say adult, an emotionally immature adult. So an emotionally immature adult will blame you for how they're acting or how they're feeling and demand that you fix their feelings. Now, sometimes, well, often, I'll say, if we're keeping it real with each other, a lot of people tend to deem emotional immaturity as narcissism. And they immediately just place it into that bucket and then write off the person completely. And the truth is that all of these symptoms obviously always are going to overlap. Just like I was explaining the obedience and the people pleasing, like they're all intertwined in some way, shape, or form. But an emotionally immature person is somebody who obviously has not matured. I'm laughing at myself because I thought I was going to say something way more profound than that, but that's the truth. They have not matured because they've got unresolved childhood trauma or adulthood trauma or a combination of the two, and they have not chosen to put in that work. And by that work, I'm doing air quotes for you because everybody's like, do the work. And I know it's like a cheeky little joke at this point, but they have not put in the work or the time to self-reflect, to look at their behaviors and their interactions or the patterns of their behaviors within their relationships or life, honestly, and take accountability for how they show up in this world. An emotionally immature adult is basically going to act like a child, but they're in adult form. And I know a lot of you experience this, at least a lot of you who have spoken to me privately experience this, because it's confusing. It's a confusing experience when you are in the presence of an emotionally immature parent, caregiver, adult in your life, because what's happening is You're looking at them physically and you're considering their age and their status in life, their accomplishments, all of that. But then their communication or their ability to manage their emotions doesn't seem to align with all of those other things. And it's confusing because most people, when they're in the presence of an emotionally immature adult, don't know how to interact with it. I just said it. the behavior, right? But the person, really, they don't know how to interact with the person. And they don't know how to interact with the person because a lot of us tend to shape our behaviors off of the title or the label of the individual. So now let's take that and put it back in context. Let's say you had an emotionally immature parent, guardian, caregiver, right? If you were raised in that type of environment, which is really a toxic stress environment, because there's emotional immaturity coming from the children, rightfully so, that is in alignment with their age and how they are developing. But then you have adults who are also emotionally immature, trying to raise children to develop into mature adults, and that just does not align. So children raised by emotionally immature adults tend to struggle emotionally as they get older because unless the circumstances were that they had a stronger influence coming from a more mature, healthier interaction with an adult or caregiver, their main influence was that emotionally immature parent or caregiver. And so these are the people in your life who you tend to want to immediately categorize as a narcissist, but may not be, usually are not. They have levels of narcissism, as we all do, but they are really just completely immature. They're emotionally stunted, and they're emotionally stunted because there's unresolved trauma, and that unresolved trauma at a certain point in your life when you become an adult is now a choice to not address. So if you are an adult and you are emotionally immature, you chose that. You chose that. When you were a child, you didn't choose that. You can choose to grow and heal and evolve at any time you want once you are an adult because you have the freedom and usually you have the ability to financially support yourself to be able to do so. So being exposed to an emotionally immature parent or caregiver would encourage you to not have emotional or physical boundaries. You weren't allowed to. There was no space to. You're a child and you're crying. I know this one firsthand. I'm crying, I'm distraught, I'm upset, and I'm a kid. And I can't turn to my parent or caregiver because they are reacting to my emotional state because they can't manage their own emotional state. Or they've internalized my emotional state and made it mean something about their ability to parent. So they've taken it personally, and then they don't have good coping tools, so they tend to take it out on you. So you learn very quickly as a kid, let me suppress all of my emotions. You're not a safe individual to turn to. So it can also encourage you because it can create anxiety in you, so it can encourage you to want to control things around you, right? So individuals who have control issues or trust issues with other people, that stems from growing up in an environment like that. It influences your sense of safety, not just safety in your relationships, but safety in your own emotions and safety within your body. And it encourages you to disrespect yourself because it's basically forbidding you to be able to openly express yourself because those first influences didn't allow a safe environment to be able to do that. So now that we've covered the three ways that you might have been taught or shown to not have boundaries, what do we do with that information? Because that's what I would be thinking if I was listening to this. Like, cool, great, Amy. now what the hell do I do? Well, I want to give you some self-reflective prompts, some questions to help you identify patterns in yourself, okay? Because obviously, if you find that you do some of these things, or maybe you listen to my description and you're like, that wasn't my upbringing, Amy, I don't struggle with that. But as I give you some of these self-reflective questions and you ask yourself, or you look and get really honest about your own patterns, you'll realize, oh shit, I do that. Maybe I wasn't raised exactly how she described it, but I do that thing that she's talking about, which means that I might not have boundaries, or I might have really weak boundaries. So I'm going to go through some of these questions. What I recommend you do is listen, if you're driving, just listen and you can replay this part. If you're not driving and you're sitting down in a safe space where you have a notebook, write out these questions for yourself, okay? Or at least write out the ones that resonate with you so you can sit and really get in touch with your own emotions and your own experiences. So the first one is, do you feel a need to be agreeable? Do you feel a need to be agreeable? I can give you variations of this. Do you feel a need to please people? Do you hate when people misperceive you? Do you hate when people misunderstand you? Or you get the sense through their body language or their tone of voice that they're upset with you. Okay? All kind of one in the same. Pick the one that resonates most and write it down. Do you elevate the needs, wants, feelings of others and prioritize them over you? Do you elevate the needs, wants, feelings of others and prioritize those needs, wants, feelings over your own? So somebody wants you to go out to dinner, but the reservation time is later than ideally you want to go out, or you're in the mood to go out that day, but you feel like you have to because they asked you. You feel like they don't always ask you or invite you, so it's a good idea to, you know, they really want you there. You don't want to let them down. You don't want to disappoint them, whatever it might be. And that's like one example of many, obviously. The next one, do you apologize even when you've done nothing wrong because you don't believe or trust others to manage their own emotional state? So you might self-identify, let's say, as someone who doesn't like conflict. That was always me. I was like, I don't like conflict. I just want to keep the peace, whatever I got to do to keep the peace. But the reason I didn't like conflict is because, A, I never had a healthy example of it. There's no healthy communication in my upbringing, and there was no healthy example of conflict resolution. So what I adapted from that type of environment, because what would happen was just a lot of screaming, yelling, and then we pretend it didn't happen, or we got the silent treatment. So what I adapted from it was like, even if I do nothing wrong, just apologize for it. Just apologize. And that takes care of everybody else's emotional state and we can all move on. And then as I got older and I started noticing I did that in my adult friendships, relationships of all kinds, even with my family still, I would find that I was just apologizing for things that really I wasn't sorry for. I didn't do anything, but they were not capable, or they had long shown me they were not capable of managing their own emotional state, self-reflecting, taking accountability, communicating clearly. So I did all the emotional labor for them. Do you self-blame a lot? Do you always immediately take the fault for a situation, somebody's reaction to you, any problem that occurs in your life? Do you immediately self-blame or self-attack? Do you fight your own feelings and abandon what you need for the sake of someone else? Do you battle your own feelings and abandon them, just like you were shown or taught, for the sake of someone else, making somebody else's emotional state above yours, more of a priority than yours, more important than yours? And finally, do you adjust what you want to say or do because of how somebody has shown you they will react or respond to you? So in other words, do you acquiesce? Do you know this person is always reactive, so I have to tiptoe, right? I have to walk on eggshells is what we always hear people say. Ultimately, my goal in this episode was to bring awareness to some of these struggles that you might be having, because again, we're entering a holiday season for a lot of us where we might need to be integrating a lot of these boundaries for our own sake, for our own sanity, for our own mental and emotional and physical health and well-being. So what's important is to be aware first and foremost that you might have one of these struggles and reflect on it and process it a little bit more using some of these prompts and these questions that I offered you in this episode, because you might know what boundaries you want to put up. You might just struggle or stumble or fear implementing them because of this. So we want to take a moment to really identify the patterns of behavior that we are committed to, that we are practicing, and then, I mean, ultimately change them, right? But in order to change them, we first have to identify them and understand them a little bit more. So we need that knowledge to know where they might have developed, who might have shown them to us. And then, hey, who knows? Then you get together for a holiday and you can you can sit back and observe instead of engage or be triggered by some of these emotionally immature ways of communicating, or watching and witnessing other people pleasing and appeasing or acquiescing. You can kind of sit back and observe the patterns, but not participate in them yourself. So that's about it for me this week, and I will chat with you next week. Until then, hopefully you enjoy this episode and you take some time to reflect on your own patterns of behavior and where you might be falling short in implementing a boundary because of a fear that was established a long time ago. If you are enjoying these episodes, please take some time to leave a review, a 5-star review, of course, on Apple or Spotify, and I will talk to you soon.